Hey everyone, welcome to Turnbuckle Boogie. I am Timothy Styles, and with me for the second week in a row, and I'll go ahead and spoil the magic, we're doing this at the exact same time. Last week's episode and this week's episode, done back to back. It's James Mattern.
Yeah, this is like Back to the Future 2 and 3.
Get on that microphone.
Oh, this is like Back to the Future 2 and 3. Is that better? Yeah, this is going to be more fun, potentially, or a nightmare, because we are recording it back to back, and I'm now...
Deep. You did bring a six pack over and you're halfway through. By the end of this episode, you're going to be fucking face down.
And I had a Guinness during supper and I had half of it before the food came out on an empty stomach. So I'm singing to the fucking angels.
Yeah. But basically what we're attempting to do here is sort of fill up our quota for the end of the year. Since it's Christmas time and we're going to be busy, you know, doing family stuff. Cody's busy, obviously, doing the same with and wrestling and all that sort of shit. But anyway, I'll go ahead and start the show after that stupid fucking explanation.
Well, we should have another minute before you do the boogie.
Yeah, yeah. So, folks, if you care to give us a Christmas present, the best way to do it
excellent
is to go to turnbuckleboogie.com, click on the gimmick table, and get yourself a Turnbuckle Boogie t-shirt. I personally picked out the logo myself.
And what a swell job you did, sir.
Oh, thanks, mister. So, yes, go to turnbuckleboogie.com, click on the gimmick table, get yourself a t-shirt. Ho, ho, ho. James, would you like to plug anything before we start?
Yes, my friend. You can find me on the Instagrams as the James Mattern. And also, I have a brand new record out called The Check Spot. The worst. It's the worst part of the comedy show, everybody. Most places.
Explain...
The check spot?
A little bit.
So,
and pull that microphone a little closer to you.
So when you see a headliner, you might stop laughing as hard as you were the first 25 minutes because about the 25-minute mark, they dropped bills. And then the...
In other words, for the people.
Yeah.
You go to a comedy club, you get your 2-drink minimum or whatever. You order a bunch of drinks. Once, right before...
Mozzarella sticks. That are burnt. Yeah.
Yeah. Right before the headliner comes out, somebody has to go out and do comedy while the waitresses bring out everyone's checks.
Well, in New York City, they do that a lot before the last act. But on the road, the headliner, for some reason, gets it 2/3 into their act, little over halfway. And so they'll do crowd work or new premises and jokes.
Right. And it's
a nightmare.
It's if you're somebody who's trying to make people laugh and then all of a sudden, everyone is having to settle their bill. It's incredibly difficult.
And they're tipsy. Right. It's just brutal. So I was doing it in New York as a host. They stopped on Saturday nights at one club giving it to young acts because that's how you pay your dues in New York City. And so I did it, and I just go, I would do a Q&A, and it went well. And I go, let's record them. And so I have an album of me answering questions from drunk, absolutely sloshed people during the pandemic, right when we reopened indoors while they pay their bills. And it's called The Check Spot. So check that out. And also, the video part of it is coming soon. I think, T, you've seen some of the raw footage. It's
fantastic.
It's really cool. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be different.
And I can't recommend the record enough because, I mean, it's available wherever you get music. I listen to it on Apple Music. Some people got the Spotify. You hit it up there. And can I talk about what we just watched video-wise?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we just watched the, I don't know what people know about making, actual vinyl records.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, you have to essentially get, a print of a record made where, you know, where they cut the grooves into the damn vinyl. That's in the process of being approved.
Yeah,
and once
yeah,
it's approved
vinyls.
In probably a couple of months, there's going to be a vinyl version of this fucking album out, and I'm proud of it.
It sounds good, to be honest. So please check it out. I'm very proud of this. I had to leave record labels to do it. People thought I was crazy. People said I wasn't going to get it on Sirius XM, and I'm in full rotation there, and it means a lot to me. It's different, and it shows who I am, and it shows how gritty comedy can be. So please check that out, and look for my new podcast dropping in January with Shuli Agar, formerly of The Stern Show, called Thanks for Coming Out, a podcast about bombing, where we interview wonderful comedians. We have a lot of people lined up, and we've already recorded some who are really probably a lot of everyone's favorite comedians, talking about horrible nights in the business and horrible early jokes when they started. And that's another project I'm really proud of. So there it is. Enough of my yip yapping.
Yeah. Enough of the yip yap.
Let's boogie. Enough of the boogieing. Let's yip yap. That'd be a great one.
You're supposed to shut up after I say let's boogie.
Oh, I thought you're cutting. Whatever. Who gives a shit?
So last week was a, I know you're texting, but I'm going to just go ahead and start talking.
Sorry. Oh, I didn't know we were still rolling.
It's all right.
I'm trying to find out if everyone's dead back in New York. Sorry about that. Trying to realize if I'm staying in Vegas.
Because of Omicron? What do you call it? Americron?
The Americon dream. Listen, babies, we've been getting you with the Deltas.
Last week was something of a potpourri of an episode. I mean, we were all over the place.
We kept bringing it back to Bret Hart.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, that's how you and I roll. It's how I roll with seemingly everyone I talk to wrestling about.
And podcasts in general should be free rolling now.
Yeah, I guess.
That's part of the appeal.
I mean, last week's episode, I started with one question, and that's all I had prepared, and that's all I needed. And I do the same thing for Cody. I start with one question, and that's all the preparation I need, because funny thing about wrestling fans, they're never short on opinions.
Oh, really? I've never noticed that. I didn't realize that.
Because we're doing it back-to-back, we didn't prepare again. So instead of just throwing out some jive-ass question, how about...
Jive-ass. Yo, that question sucks. How bad is that question?
It's jive-ass. It is a jive-ass turkey of a question. This week, I want to do a little deep dive on AEW.
Okay.
And specifically, I say AEW because I haven't watched WWE in some time. I mean, this is the first year I've not watched WrestleMania ever.
Oh, you didn't watch the Tampa, the return to a stadium?
No. And I hear there was a great match on it with Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks. But, man, for whatever reason, there was something to, and I promise we'll get to AEW here, but there was something to that, what I call COVID mania, the one where it was a two-night event.
Oh, yeah.
There was no COVID audience. Mania. There was no audience. I think it's WrestleMania 36. It was so brutal. It made me... I'll explain it like this, and I think I've explained it like this before. When I saw Star Wars Episode 9, I walked out of the theater feeling like, was this all bullshit? Not just, yes, Star Wars 9.
No, I felt the same as you with that.
The entire series, like, was this all bullshit the whole time? You know, did I just waste my entire life fucking paying attention to an entire franchise? All because of this one movie.
Oh, I concur.
I had the same feeling when I watched, as I call it, COVID Mania, WrestleMania 36, 2 days of of what I thought was, look, I give it credit where credit is due. They tried to do something nice during a time where people really needed some entertainment, and that's great.
Their hands are tied.
But they really showcased how stupid the fucking industry can be.
I think the Boneyard match is quite fun and good. I didn't hate the greatest wrestling match. I know a lot of the wrestling critics
hated
it. I kind of enjoyed it watching it.
I think that was after.
No. They did another one after.
We're talking about Edge and...
Well, their first match I liked. I did like it. People hated it. I liked it.
Okay, so I haven't watched the last two WrestleManias then. You're right. I'm sorry. I didn't watch the last one. That's with Edge and...
Oh, that was Edge, Daniel Bryan. That was the one match I watched.
Now I'm fucked up.
So the main event of night two of this past one was Roman Reigns defending against Daniel Bryan. He was still Daniel Bryan then.
Right.
And Edge, because they realized Edge wasn't over as a babyface, so they healed him out and added Daniel Bryan. That match was great. I watched it on the train. I still lived deep in Brooklyn at that point. I think we had just opened in New York City indoors. I think it was like the second weekend,
mm-hmm,
and I had a full Sunday of two or three shows. made a little bit of scratch, and I watched WrestleMania with little internet on the train, and that match was very entertaining. I remember leaving
I remember the story of this, but wasn't Edge, you know, he was brought back. He won, I think, the Royal Rumble, right?
Oh, yeah.
So he was slated to be in the main event or something. I forget whatever it was, but the word was, they very quickly realized, and the word was, Vince thought he looked old. Because, shocker, he is fucking old.
He's not young.
Yeah. So he basically gets put into a three-way to pad it out, I guess, because, you know, apparently Daniel Bryan on the poster makes that proposition look better, I guess.
I guess, but they love old guys, though. They love Goldberg. All do. They love Goldberg.
Yeah.
Oh, let's bring him back. Guy who had two moves his whole career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. But what a story that is. But look, you hate fantasy booking and we shit on WWE.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
God, the old guy still has it. Such a great story.
Yeah.
I've come back. And you're supposed to, you were promised to be the next big thing for years, and you barely have scratched the surface. And it took you this long to realize it. And look at me, I'm back. I'm back to remind you that you aren't as big as you fucking think you are.
Right.
And that what I've gone through, and I had to walk away to realize that I need to come back to vindicate shit. To me, that's simple storytelling. That's great story. Who doesn't like that? Because we're all going to get old at one point.
Sure.
And we're all, and everyone feels obsolete at one point. Even the most arrogant person who thinks they're this shit, deep down. Remember, we all root for Rudy.
Yeah.
Donald Trump roots for Rudy. and relates to Rudy.
Right.
No one roots for him to stay on the fucking bench. No one roots against the Hoosiers. You know what I'm saying? Like, no one does. And so to me, that's the story. I'm an old man. That was so great about Terry Funk and ECW.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just old man that they told to not come back. And I was supposed to leave a long time ago. But I love this. And this is who I am. And this is what I'm going to do. And I want to prove to myself and the world that I still have it.
Oh, right.
It's classic old story. It's old John Wayne. It's this classic arc. It's Clint Eastwood. Dirty Harry's an old man who was told that he's behind in the times and this isn't how you do business and you shouldn't do it. And there's a new way of doing it. It's great. It's great. Nope, he looks fucking old. Let's make it. But that being said, that match was very great. It was a great match. Yeah. Of course, there are some talented people in that match. Edge can work. I was never a huge fan.
Right.
But it's great. He can work. And we all know about Danielson.
I can look back in retrospect and say that Edge's solo work was pretty fantastic. I mean, I didn't like him,
I didn't like him in the moment at all.
Because I was always a mark, right? So, when it came to tag teams, it's like, well, you know, I wasn't crazy in love with the Hardys the way a lot of people were, but I fucking loved the Dudley Boys.
Oh, I did too.
You know, so you like who goes the hard way and goes up the, you know, the indies and all that sort of shit. And then, of course, to me, you know, Edge and Christian, they might as well have been the monkeys of the WWE to me. And they kept getting the titles. And it's like, yeah, it makes sense because, in retrospect, the Dudley Boys at the time were not – this is pre-ECW coming to an end. The WWE didn't own the Dudley Boys property yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I was all about the Dudley Boys, but Edge and Christian, I was not into at all. But when he got a little older and after all that Matt Hardy love triangle shit wore off and he cut his hair a little shorter and he was a butt fucking lead on TV.
God, what they try to get away with and what they did is insanity.
He was a real fucking lead on. He was a real fucking sleazeball. And you have to admit, he was really good at his job. He had really good facials. Pretty decent wrestler.
His facials annoyed me.
Yeah, well.
His combination of those eyes
and
that jawline angered me.
You know what angers
this
me?
Shit.
But I will say this, and people who listen to this show regularly know, I'm no fan of the Money in the Bank, and this motherfucker is the symbol of it. He's the one that established.
More than Punk? Didn't Punk win the first two? Or no, Van Damme won the first. Didn't Punk win two of the first, like, four in a row?
No, I think that Well, Punk did win a couple in a row, yes. But I think he won them after Edge, because Edge won one of the early ones, right? But that's where they set up that he's the, what is the term they use? He's the ultimate optimist or whatever they call him.
What was his
name? Not that.
Well, he was the rated R superstar. Yuck. When they're PG, when they were in PG era, shut up.
Right.
The
right.
Rated R. That's who's rated R?
Right. But yeah, the idea that I think he was the one where they really established that a match could happen at any time.
Yeah.
You know, instead of what Rob Van Dam did, which was just call out John Cena and go, on this night,
yeah,
4 weeks from now, you and I are going to have a match.
One night
Edge,
stand.
Yeah. Edge great shows match. Up after a match is over, does one move, and it's over.
Yeah, I'm done with that.
Oh, man, I've been done with it a long time.
I kind of hate it. What a gimmicky way to get someone over. But you know why they do it? Because then you still kind of save face losing the belt that way after a match.
Oh,
tired.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's obvious.
They just can't.
Well, there is a stretch of time where I really... If there was a stretch of time where in like 5 years, every title change was by something like this, where the person never defended the belt and then he lost it to somebody because of one move, because of one of these sort of scenarios. And it's like, yo, this title has never meant less.
Well, so if we're going to go with AEW, one of the things that makes him special.
Yes.
Clean finishes. There's some nefarious horse shit here and there. But it's not dusty finishes. All due respect to my favorite wrestler of all time and his booking style.
Dusty is your favorite of all time?
He's my favorite wrestler, yeah.
Good for you.
Influences me as a comic. I love him. As an MC. I'd say as an MC, I'm influenced a lot by Dusty Rhodes.
I get that. I mean, you know me from my band days. I fucking told everyone, Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes were where I got my stage presence from.
Well, there's a bit of Piper. I think our big threes are kind of similar.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, absolutely. Piper, when I'm doing a set, there's a lot of Piper.
Yeah.
If I have to get shitty with an audience, but that's another
story. Do you use that tiddlywinks line on?
My voice will go up sometimes when I give the business. Yeah. Oh, tiddlywinks is the best. I told you when I met him, I go, yo, my boys, we still quote WrestleMania 2. I'll give up tiddlywinks. And he got a big smile, but there was some shit going on behind the scenes. So we got broken up from the interview, but I loved him. God, that's the best promo. If you knock me out, T, I will give up wrestling. I'll give up tiddlywinks. I'll give up girls. And then he turns to Bob Orton Jr. and goes, I can't give you up, baby. And smacks him around. Weird. Weird.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Russ Davis speaking to you from ringside at International Amphitheater in Chicago, where tonight the gorgeous one, gorgeous George himself, the old toast of the coast, is meeting Der Hans Schnabel. Like our Jeffries has a new cutaway here tonight. This one is rather an orchid color. Too bad we don't have color TV. That is widespread quantities. Jeffries is standing here at attention as if he were getting ready to pipe the Grand Admiral of the fleet aboard. George will be coming in from your right. We understand there's something a little special been added tonight. Well, there's some of the Andy Frame men who always precede him. And here it is. Gorgeous George. One of the... Oh, no, ostrich... Well, shades of Sally Rand. Police. Ostrich feathers, no less. Say, aren't we done up beautifully? Now look, George, don't be sensitive because the customers are hooting and yelling. What else can you expect, dear boy? There are pink and white marabous here. What on earth they are, I don't know. The note was just handed to me, but the robe is pink. Yeah, Hans, I agree with you, boy. Yes, that's the guy you're going to wrestle, Georgie. And you want to be a little bit careful of him. He's got about as much horsepower as one of these big GE diesels. Good evening, George.
Yeah, he was a weird dude. I mean, I know that it's frowned upon, but it was completely lost on me, the half black stuff. I mean, I literally, as a child, had no understanding of what the fuck any of that meant.
Buddy, it's tough. It is tough. I love him to death. I watched that a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
What makes it worse
is that there's no context.
Well, no.
There's reason
he's
for
baiting,
it.
He's the baby face baiting the black heel. Mm-hmm. There's no need to do that.
Right.
And then, so he doesn't look racist, gives a shout out to Nelson Mandela. Like, that fixes it. You already know you're fucking up. Why? Like, it's crazy. Mad love to Mandela. Because this is when Nelson got out and was becoming the president of South Africa, signaling change and apartheid. This is an absolutely important moment in history. It's nice he's giving a shout out to. It's not nice that he's doing it because he's half black and doesn't want and wants to. He was covering his base. Well, here's a story. So that's horrible. And and you would think, and you should, if you are like, I feel weird at times when I admit that I love Piper and that he influences me as a comic.
Right.
With
I don't think that. Hey, look, I have a general rule. I don't think it's fair to judge things in the past by the standards of today. It's not fair.
Well, but I feel bad when I say that in front of like black colleagues and friends of mine.
I find most black people love fucking Piper. Well, they don't give a fuck.
Well, I'll tell you this. So rewind about, let's see, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I still, as a older gentleman, go out on Halloween. I do not work on Halloween unless it's a Friday or Saturday, and I have to.
Sure.
I go to comedy club parties, and I went dressed as Roddy Piper, and it meant a lot. And I was still living in Astoria with roommates, and we were all going to Stand Up New York's party, and the train was closing its door. And we're like, rats, we missed it.
Rats. And I don't hear rats enough.
Well, you hit it that night. The door opens. The conductor is right by the window, goes, "Get in, Hot Rod is a black dude." And he was so happy. And I'm like, and we're in there, we're live. I'm like, yo, this motherfucker forgave WrestleMania 6. He forgave it. Black dude was just so happy. All right, Hot Rod. He was having a blast. I think he took a picture of me.
I forgot that you were Hot Rod. You know, it's funny.
Oh, hot girls that night. Yeah, it was a great night.
And I generally do my best to not talk about old band stuff because no one gives a shit. But I did. There was a Halloween that my band was booked for. And we were booked at a place that was known as a heavy metal joint. And I was not interested in playing this thing. And I told the booker so. I said, "Hey, look, man, we just don't fit this kind of joint." He's like, "Hey, man, we're trying to break out of that mold." Yeah. I was like, "All right, I'll do it." And then I saw the lineup, and we were put on a bill with a bunch of other, like, I forget what kind of music it is. Basically, like, goth rockabilly.
Well, that's weird.
Yes, because we are the exact opposite of that. Sonically, like, we were over the top, you know. Like I said, my stage presence influence was Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. It was very Hives-esque. So to be put on a set with, I think they were called the Coffin Cats.
Oh, I'd like that booking.
2 Ks, by the way. But anyway, so once I saw that, I was like,
thank God not three. Based on everything we've been talking about the last 5 minutes, thank God not 3 Ks.
So I told the band, I said, fuck it. Let's show up in the most colorful shit we could think of. Let's show up dressed, because it's a Halloween show. Let's show up dressed as 80s pro wrestlers.
Right.
I came as Piper. The other guitar player came as the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. He even had a fake beard glued on his face.
Wow, excellent.
The bass player didn't commit. I had him almost convinced to show up as the Ultimate Warrior with the Bon Jovi wig and the shoelaces tied around his arms. At the last minute, he chickened out. He went with Mean Gene Okerlund.
Not bad.
Not bad.
That's kind of fun. That's more fun because it's not really rock and roll.
Right. And he was notorious for having these huge sort of lamb chop sideburns.
Great.
It's the only time in history he's ever shaved these fucking things off.
Good for him.
Just and put a mustache on. So I'll give him a little bit of credit. And the drummer, who I notoriously had a rough time with over the years, showed up in his actual high school wrestling singlet because he was just a fuckface.
He wanted motherfuckers to know I lettered.
Yeah,
he was. I was banging pen pals, bro.
And he wore the headgear too, so he looked like fucking Kurt Angle.
That's
back
fun.
There. I can look back at it now and laugh, but at the time, I mean, this guy fucked up every Halloween show we ever had. We did.
Oh, I remember this one.
Oh, you remember the one where we were supposed to be the dead presidents? You know,
I'm gonna be a monkey.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna wear the Nixon mask, and then the day of, I'm gonna be a gorilla. Like, what the fuck? We're supposed to be the presidents. It's like, I'm gonna be a monkey.
I could imagine this, if I was you, I'd be like, all right, let me introduce the band, like on stage that night.
Yeah.
On guitar, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. On bass, Mean Gene Okerlund. I'm your singer, Roddy Piper. And on drums, Dan Gable. I would
have gone with that. No, you know what he looked like? He looked like Rick Steiner.
Well, that's great then.
Yeah. He looked like the dog faced. What's his name? The dog-faced killer? Dog-faced
gremlin. Jesus, that's what right. A fucking... Here's he had how to live with that his whole life?
I'll tell you what... I planned to walk the room.
Yeah.
For the non-comedy fans out there. That means to basically fucking clear the house.
Which there is a... At one point in your career, it's a badge of honor to do that.
Right.
Patrice O'Neal, rest his soul, used to do that sometimes.
Right.
Just be like, I hate them. I'm going to get you to get the fuck out. I'm going to do this for me.
Yeah. And so I planned, because I had been sort of told one thing and given another, I planned to walk the room before the coffin cats went on. And the way I was going to do it is...
That's so dick in front of the headliner.
The way God. I was going to do it was, I was going to take off the hot rod shirt and whip off the kilt, and I had the blue Speedo on underneath, and I was going to threaten that audience to... You know, who wants to fucking grapple and jump into the audience and just start stretching people? Which is exactly
you
what...
You go to jail.
No, I was. I wasn't assaulting people. But, you know, because no one wants to get touched by a sweaty, giant dude in
tights,
underwear.
Yeah, that's fair. In underwear. What happened to you? Oh, I got fucked up by dude in underwear.
The lead singer.
A sweaty guy in underwear. Oh, I thought you were tougher than that, bro. Yeah.
Well, that's what happened. I took the shit off and I said, who wants to fucking wrestle? And I leapt into the audience and that place fucking cleared out so fast. And the funny thing was, I was running a heel promo.
Yeah.
Program, I'll say. But you know who liked the show more than anyone? The fucking Coffin Cats. Those guys stopped me after the show and like, that's the greatest set we've ever seen.
Well, it's different. Everyone just sees someone go, hi, we're going to rock you, or say nothing in between. Just 1, 2, 3, 4 into the songs.
Right.
It takes balls to be different. Yo, people love that. People love. Because here's what we go back to it. You do a wrestling podcast. You know, I bet still to this day, even though people know who you are, when you tell people you have a wrestling podcast, they're still, why are you wasting your time? That's bullshit. It's real.
By the way, no one says that to me at all.
Good. Well, I'll say it now. It's bullshit. You should stop this. You should spend more time with your family. It's real show business. Like, I'm a comic. There's so many comics who love it. The elements of it is people don't realize. The storytelling, it's beginning, middle, ends. It's good guys, bad guys. It's in-betweens. There's elements of reality. There's elements of non-reality because we all wish for something more than reality. Wrestling captures it. And it's show business. And it is show business. It is there's no you can say sports entertainment, all this shit. You can say it's kind of a sport. It's show business. It's vaudeville. Still alive.
There's protagonists. There's antagonists. Mm-hmm. There, instead of, you know, movies generally have three acts. This has a multitude of them, and you could stretch it out over the course of years.
Or a match.
Yep.
Matches have beginning. I tell people this. Watch a good match.
Yeah.
Beginning, middle, end. Beginning. That's what we all should. As a comic, when telling stories, there should be a beginning, middle, and end.
Yep.
Doesn't have to be. There can be exceptions in that, but that's basically what it is. It's still storytelling. I tell people that with showbiz, with sizzle, it's fun. It's that, but that's what's great about it. And they appreciated that aspect of it, other than what music had been and rock and roll in quotations had been at that point. You know, rock and roll, there was so much showbiz elements to it. It got too much at one point.
Yeah.
But you watched the initial great, so the wave of rock and roll, right?
Which
Chuck
one?
Berry.
Oh, okay.
The initial rock and roll, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Chuck Berry. Put on a fucking show.
Yeah, Johnny B. Good. He told was a fucking story. Duck walking across the stage.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yep.
Showbiz, right?
Yeah. Kind of show. The a little bit too much showbiz. Yeah. Shit.
Too much show. Little Richard, would you say he's showbiz?
Hey, man, he's the best.
And those are the three, and then Elvis. And Elvis showbiz.
Yep.
So those are your four who, the main rock and roll people. I'm not saying they invented it. That's another debate.
Sure.
A lot of showbiz there. Interesting, isn't it? That's where it started. Putting on a show, a story, when you go see them live. Pretty awesome. And then it got the point where people weren't doing it.
Anyone can write a song and anyone can wrestle. Are you an attraction or not? That's the big question. And I'm not saying you need to fucking do your hair up like Little Richard and go, woo, and all that stuff, but you got to come with something. It should be interesting.
Ahoy, Turnbuckle Boogies. It's Cutthroat Cody again. And you're listening to Timothy Styles and James Mattern go on about Gorgeous George probably. And what cannot be said about a man that basically brought pomp and circumstance into the world of professional wrestling. I was a big fan of the arrogance spray that there's pictures of on the interwebs of him having sprayed on them for his bouts. And I think that the entire industry kind of changed as soon as he came into the scene. So how could you not appreciate a man that literally has arrogance in a can that sprays it on himself to achieve maximum arrogance? I'm not good at jokes. James Mattern is, though. So check out his album. It's really fun. And then tell Timothy Styles that despite the fact sometimes that we argue, he's still one of my best friends. Merry Christmas, y'all. Happy Hanukkah, the holidays, words. Place Scattergories with your family, friends, and loved ones. Because I just got done playing Scattergories with my fiance, and I fucking suck at it. At least I'm good at wrestling. Talk to you soon, Turnbuckle Boogies. Bye-bye.
There's nothing wrong with just being a mechanic in wrestling or just being technically
a good
musician.
Oh, I thought you meant like a gimmick.
Well, that too.
I'm Mike the Mechanic.
That's half of my non-comedy friends are all mechanics and shit. But there's no shame in just being technically good in that.
Well, there's roles that need to be played.
And that's a role. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And we need those.
I'm going to swing this back to AEW because I threatened to talk about
it. That's right.
Exclusively.
Well, I almost got us to it because we don't even know who this episode's about. Because of Little Richard and all that, you know where I was going to go with this.
No.
Oh.
Little Richard and who?
And well, we were talking about Little Richard and we don't know who this episode's about, right? Retired wrestler.
No, we haven't named it yet. Oh, who's the link to Little Richard in the wrestling world? Ooh.
I'll give you a hint.
Please.
But I'm going to do it like Cockney, okay? In which you'll get Brock Lesnar. Who's Brock Lesnar married to?
Sable?
Who was she married to? This episode has to be, even if we don't even go back to this and we just go to AEW for the last half, why wouldn't it be Johnny B. Badd, Mark Miro at this point?
I'm not sure I can name an episode after him. That's too much credit for
Johnny B. Badd. Dusty Rhodes apparently thought of that. A Little Richard and sexually ambiguous character. Babies, you're going to be Little Richard.
It's crazy how different he was towards the end of his career when he was like shadow boxing and coming out in the robe and everything. And then when he was
to defeat that
Johnny B. Badd.
Well, he wanted to get over that the amount of homophobia in that was still around.
I was not watching WCW during that time period.
With that character was what Goldust did later.
Yeah.
I mean, people can pretend it's not. They were
gay baiting or whatever you want to call it.
Absolute gay baiting. And same with Johnny B. Badd. Yeah. It was gay baiting.
Was he?
Yes. And the irony of that is that Little Richard, as a homosexual or a bisexual, was no...
By the way, not confirmed. I think he's still an eligible bachelor. I don't think he's ever admitted to
in the grave.
He's a fucking preacher.
Well, that's why he, but no, he was never good. No, he ended up being gay. It came out. But
did he?
Yes, but he was not a fan of them. John Waters, to this day, the great indie filmmaker, that was his hero growing up in Baltimore. And he goes, it hurts. It's like, I still love him and I still love the music, but it hurts because he was no supporter of gay rights. Yeah. The irony. So the irony of a wrestler based on Little Richard to get people to hate him because of the sexual ambiguousness and the gay undertones. It's interesting because the guy who he was parroting had angst and anger towards being gay. It's probably self-hating. But yeah, and it's interesting that it was clearly to get people angry with that.
Where are you at with Adrian Street?
First of all, my opinions are not the public's on this. I love Adrian Street, and to me that's so
brilliant. First of all, his fucking record is the shit.
He's the best. So, but I'd love, that's so punk rock because he could beat any. He's a coal miner who loved glitter rock, which later is called glam, but it was called glitter rock in England where it was a sensation.
Yeah, Mark Bolan, T-Rex, all that shit.
Some of the best stuff in the world, and he did it, but he does it, you know, I wear like Madonna shirts, and I'm not a tough guy, but I wear Dolly Parton shirts. I wear stuff where I have a Vans backpack that's with flowers on it.
Right.
And it's kind of I'm kind of baiting you to, please say something ignorant.
Right.
Please say, fuck you. And that is kind of his gimmick. But he did that to get the heat.
Right.
And it was a brilliant gimmick. And in a way, I think it was probably understood that he was defending, that he was making more a statement that was pro and your own insecurities.
But he was a heel, and he was, I mean, getting the fans riled up by threatening to grab his opponent by the honker.
Yeah, which is amazing. So I guess, yeah, are you saying then my opinion on him in the long run, where he was playing into that shit to get himself over? That's interesting, yeah. But in hindsight, it does look like he was a champion for gay folk and for being who you are,
mm-hmm.
and showing a mirror to society's homophobic. Well, he came up with the gimmick. So I'll say that he came up with the gimmick himself.
Right.
And these other two we mentioned, Goldust and Johnny B. Badd, were brought up by the promoters puffing on cigars or cigarettes going, this will get everyone angry. He goes, I'll make them angry and I'll show them what's really going on. What? He also was an absolute badass. But he didn't work the same way those guys did. They worked as chicken shits, correct?
Yeah.
And
he was a shooter.
Still a badass shooter. And had a wife.
Yeah.
Who was also glammed out.
I don't think it was understood that his wife, who was his valet, I think it was suggested that that's just some girl he pals around with. It wasn't his wife, was it?
I don't know if they built it, but I think they still were. I think they almost played him as that they were both swingers and open.
Because the thing, I really think that like it was just his valet, but his valet in secret was his wife. But the funny thing is if you take the gay element out of the gimmick, he could still do the exact same act and just be, you know, Mark Bolan comes to Memphis or whatever. It would have been enough.
Yeah, it should have. Well, so here, in full disclosure, I didn't know him till WCCW went under. So as a kid, ESPN used to show AWA.
Right.
Or
from the showboat. Boo.
Past their prime.
Yeah, yeah.
Boring as shit. And they also had.
And with all their, you know, when Mean Gene's gone.
It's, yeah. Not the
forget
same.
It.
And then World Class, which passed its prime.
Yes.
When Von Erichs were dying, the Freebirds were gone, but they'd show at least sometimes on those shows, show old shit a lot.
Right.
Which was great. And you watch, oh man, the hair match with Buddy Roberts and all that. But then that went under and they tried again at the Sportatorium with Global Championship Wrestling. And they had these big tournaments and they brought in exotic Adrian Street. So I didn't know him from anything else.
He
was back in Europe when I was watching UWF and those territories.
Mm-hmm.
They brought him back. I got him at his end before he retired.
Right.
And so I didn't see him in his prime till later. I see some stuff. So I'm not as familiar as him in his prime and what he did with those matches and what he did with his wife as the valet. But I remember that short run. But I remember going, this guy's amazing.
Well, his gimmick was, and I mean his not his character or whatever. The gimmick of the match, you know, like in a tag match, the gimmick of the match is to get the fucking tag. His big gimmick was he's going to kiss you.
Yeah, that's right.
And can you avoid it? You know what I mean? And of course, if he was going over, he'd kiss you. You know, whatever.
Yeah, and I get it's a subject of the times.
Yep.
But,
hey, man, I love glam rock.
But he was the first to do that, right? Well, I guess Gorgeous George had elements of that, correct?
Kind of, and no, because Gorgeous George, on paper, sounds like it's inspired by some sort of homoerotic kind of deal. But the truth is, he was a well-known womanizer. It's just for whatever reason, this guy liked to go get his fucking hair done and those, you know, that blue dome over your head where you get curls and put in. He would do that and he would put gold-plated bobby pins in his fucking hair and all this sort of wild shit that was so alien to everybody. He was just a weird old carny.
But he was the first of that, wasn't he?
Yes.
Boy, don't you think, God, that's a fucking movie? A biopic on him or... I'll tell you, a series based on that character specifically in that time in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, when you have characters like Gotch
fucking
Hackenschmidt running around, and along comes this guy who's wearing elaborate robes and has a guy come. He had this gimmick with him, Gorgeous George, when he would roll through town. I forget where I think he was from Florida or somewhere, but it was a tank, and on the, and like that you, with a, the mask where you breathe out of it, and it just had on it Florida Air, and he would go, oh, this town so smells great. So bad.
He so would great
huff out of this fucking this tank that said Florida Air, because wherever they were at was so disgusting. You know, a guy would come in with the big elaborate the thing that Rick Martel used to have, the big,
where he had his fragrance arrogance. Yes.
Yes. And he'd have to have perfume put on the mat and all this sort of stuff. I mean, this is way over the top stuff for that time period.
If I'm not mistaken.
But he was a legendary piece of shit. Womanizer. Drunk. Just a terrible dude.
Died broke. If I'm not mistaken, I know everyone says that theme music started with the Von Erichs, right? In WCCW. That's, when Fritz was... a visionary.
Well, fucking Michael Hayes loves to put himself over as that shit.
With that.
Right? I mean, this. The truth is it's been going on forever.
But didn't Gorgeous George before, and I could be wrong, I thought he came out the Pomp and Circumstance before.
I believe so as well.
The Macho Man. Yeah, I mean, but World Class did it so well when you didn't worry about licensing.
Yeah.
Kevin came out to Tom Sawyer.
Right.
And I want to say that David came out to Stranglehold by Ted Nugent. And I forget what Carrie came out to.
Hmm.
Had drug
probably
joke.
Footloose.
Yeah. Hey, y'all. Boy, he could never finish a promo. God bless him. Rest in peace, Carrie.
But I have no fear for Elio DiPaolo. He's a very clean, upright young man. And certainly... Now Joe Moscato, the referee, gets a little... This bout hasn't even gotten underway yet, if you can imagine. Jerry Dupre, the valet, was using that atomizer pretty well. And it arcs back to the days of when they used it over Bob Wagner. The bout is now officially underway with an airplane spin. It's all over! If you think Gorgeous George is dazed, you should see this crowd. They're all breaking around the ring now. Gorgeous George is completely dazed. He has no idea what's happened. Just about ready to take it out on his female valet, but she's got the atomizer in her right hand. He's blaming his defeat on his valet. But slight though she may be, she can handle that thing, I can assure you.
The human... Orchid faded in 17 seconds. The winner, Ileone Paolo.
Gorgeous George is still protesting that that airplane spin was not legal, and he wants to get this match underway once again. But of course, it's all over officially, and that's the way it'll stay in the record books. Ilia DiPaolo winning over Gorgeous George in a matter of 17 seconds after his famous airplane spin.
All right, so let's give an updated commentary on AEW.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and start. Actually, I'll start with a question.
Ooh.
How do you feel about the tag team division as it stands right now, December?
They have a lot of great talent.
2021.
There. Here, I will be blunt here. I feel that the product is a little meandering right now after, even though that pay-per-view was very good,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have much interest going into that.
Do you think it's post-pay-per-view hangover kind of stuff? Or
and they, as we discussed off air, this pay-per-view is usually the end of January. It's now March, first week of March. So it's a weird build. There's a bigger gap. So you don't want to shoot your load, even though they're going to have a bunch of mini. These last few episodes, as this episode of the podcast airs, probably, I'm guessing some surprises happened on the Christmas Eve, whatever, episode.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like that in the New Year's Eve episode, I think's going to have surprise. There's going to be some of that shit going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're doing a thing back on TNT like January 8th, Battle of the Belts, which is the old championship wrestling from Florida thing. So they're doing that, but the pay-per-view itself is going to be a slower build. So there is a bit of that. And they're leaving TNT.
Right.
They'll probably do a bunch of big episodes up front.
Isn't Rampage going to stay on TNT?
Yes, but Dynamite's going to TBS.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot of that. They're also, as we've discussed this, their potential for ratings isn't the same because the West Coast, you are, and I will be this week.
Yeah, I've been watching it 5 p.m.
Yes. Well, I'm going to watch it on my Hulu Plus DVR, right. Whatever, when I get done working. And it's
crazy that you pay for that. Isn't it $60 a month or some shit?
And I did specifically for that and my love of the Celtics, which this year, they're not fun to watch. So it's like,
man, when there's so many like fucking streaming services and they're $10 a piece, a $60 service is a stretch for me.
Yeah, what are you going to do, Bubba? I was broke for so long. It felt nice that I could afford to do it.
That's right. You made it.
Yeah, shoot me down now before I can not make it again. So they... We've discussed this. They kind of, you'll get bored at times and wonder what Tony Khan's doing. He seems to pay off almost everything long term.
Yeah. Well, mostly. Yeah.
For the most part. But or, mostly is a huge win.
Oh, absolutely. And even when, like, one of my favorite units, I'll say right now, in recent memory, since they debuted in NXT, has been FTR. I mean, I think these guys are doing the fucking Lord's work right now.
Yeah.
Like, they are fantastic. And just bouncing all over the AAA tag titles and all that shit. The shit they were doing as the fucking Ranas, the Frogs, whatever it was.
The Frogs is fun.
That's fucking great. They're in the middle of a fucking online beef with the... Which, I mean, it's so obvious that we're going to see some Briscoe action here soon.
Which will be a massive payoff.
Oh, yeah.
Through the roof.
But...
And a great match.
And there was a payoff to them versus the Young Bucks. But let's face it, it was not the best because it was a one and done. And I feel like they wasted a huge... Because that shit built up for years.
Well, the injury, right? Didn't the injury come right around that?
I don't remember.
One of those boys got injured. And so they took a back seat for a while.
Is that what happened?
But now they're back. And they're heating them back up. And can we say Tully? I know there was a lot of skepticism to the old guys they brought in to manage.
Mm-hmm. Tully's great.
Tully wasn't great initially.
Mm-hmm.
Tully's outstanding.
Right.
And they're somehow flirting with him versus Arn eventually as two old ass men. And for some reason... I'd be okay with a 5-minute bullshit match with them.
Hey,
they've done a good job with it. They've done a great job.
We're old school cats. I don't give a shit. I'll watch those two have at it just for a few minutes because.
Well, Arn did himself a favor with the Glock fucking promo.
Jesus Christ.
So that alone, if you just reshow that, building to that match,
yeah,
people will go banana.
Yeah.
One banana.
But I mean, but that there was technically a payoff, but I think it was a waste. There was more to it. There was more juice in that fucking that fruit to end it so quickly. I mean, they
it's
really,
not over yet.
Oh, yeah.
If you think the Bucks and FDR aren't going to each get a second reign and a good reign and another run at each other, you're nuts. That's going to happen. Those two teams will stay around together. Mm-hmm. Here, let's discuss this. AEW cares about tag teams and doesn't give you the belt and then go, you served your purpose of having that belt. You two are going to break up and fight now.
Right.
Another company, I don't know who, might do that all the time. They're not in a rush to do that. They can unheat you for a minute and then heat you back up and put you back into it, which is what that business used to be.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's twofold. Most of those tag teams, not all, but most, you can't split them up. Imagine the Young Bucks split up, how good either one would do, quite honestly.
If you did it, you'd do it for 6 months to have them fight each other and bring them back together.
Right.
As a schmoz to turn on someone else. Yes.
Right. But together, much better package.
Oh, and it happens. But you see that.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll didn't work broken up.
Yeah.
Midnights didn't work broken up, which even though they didn't feud with each other, and I love Bobby Eaton.
Yep.
Bobby Eaton without Stan or Dennis isn't the same.
Wasn't the best talker, sadly.
Yeah. He was in the Dangerous Alliance, no?
And, I don't think so.
Well, wasn't he?
I think that.
In a tag team with Zbyszko? I think he was.
Interesting. I don't remember. But I mean, he was not known as a great talker, but as a fucking worker. The dude was out of control.
My favorite tag team of all time to this day.
It's really and nice. I don't think I that there's them. A whole lot of fucking fans or pro wrestlers who would argue. I mean, let's seriously talk about this for
and
a minute.
FDR comes out to their music now. That's a wink.
Yeah.
They come out to The Chase from Midnight Express by Giorgio Moroder. They did a parody of it, which is what they never licensed that song.
Right.
I think that WWE is so scared that their version was such a knockoff that they could get sued by Mordor. They edit that out in the old videos.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, which sucks. But they used to come out to a poor man's remake of it. It's so great. And they're coming out to one. And it's so good because they do wink at you and go, this is our favorite tag team.
Yeah.
And we're celebrated by Cornette.
Yeah.
Well, go on.
Oh, no. Hey, man, if I had my chance, I'd fucking put over FTR for hours on end because I think they're the absolute best.
I didn't like them initially when they came in. I was
into
their
AEW?
Hype. And I looked at them and I felt like what I've hated in wrestling. I go, look at how small they are and shit.
Oh, is that what you thought?
And then.
But what about their. I mean, they had a handful of classic matches in NXT.
Oh, they were great. And I was at some of them.
Oh, that's right.
I was at the TakeOver Brooklyn 2, where I thought that DIY, who I loved, won the belts.
Was that with the double tap out?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was amazing. It was a great match. And I was like, oh, my God, they gave. Because I love Ciampa.
Right.
A lot. And, oh, my God, I thought they won. It was an amazing match. Mm-hmm. It was such an amazing match. And, they're spectacular. But I was just sick of the hype and being told that I'm supposed to think they're the greatest ever. And they are kind of boring dudes in a lot of ways. And that's the importance of Tully, because they are so good in the ring. Tully does all the talking now and is outstanding. And with his big fucking rhinestone jackets and horse shit. It's excellent.
I never found them boring because both of them can cut promos like badasses. That's the great thing. And Tully adds to it.
Oh, Tully's so amazing.
They're both great talkers, and I think they're both fucking great wrestlers.
Tully was out of the business.
Yeah.
A lot of it because...
What was he doing this whole time?
He was running prison ministries.
He was going to prisons. I thought J.J. Dillon did that.
No, J.J. ran a prison.
Yeah, he was a warden, right?
J.J. became a warden because he had to earn a certain amount of money after one company went under and the other one bring him back.
Right.
And he became... I don't know how he's qualified after... That should tell you.
You don't know how he's qualified to run a fucking prison after being someone of importance in the wrestling business?
But specifically WCW at the end. Yeah, that he becomes a warden in New Jersey. You hear about him. You know, he had special needs child, and he had to earn certain money.
I see. I didn't know that.
And so he couldn't go back to anything else. He had to earn six figures and do shit.
Dang.
I love JJ. You know, I think he's one of the most underrated managers of all time and a great talent.
I thought he was a good authority figure in WCW,
too. I thought he was good, too. And as a babyface, after years of being a wonderful piece of shit heel. Guys, watch old JJ Dillon. That whole unit of the original Four Horsemen could all talk.
Yeah.
And yet they had JJ in it, added to them.
Did he ever bump?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. He was a wrestler.
Yeah,
he
I know that. But, I mean, look, there's no... You know, when they show highlight packages of legendary managers, you're going to see Bobby Heaton flailing about. You're going to see Cornette flailing about. Even fucking Dangerously is flailing about.
Well, his match with Missy was huge. People did not realize his feud with Missy Hyatt Heyman was amazing.
Yeah, but
was huge.
J.J. Dillon, I don't recall any like highlight packages of him flailing about.
The first, I believe, two War Games.
Yeah.
It was 5-on-5. It would be the
he was in the ring too.
Bubba's. It would be the Four Horsemen and JJ.
Yeah.
Versus the Road Warriors.
Dusty.
Nikita.
Yeah.
And Pretty Paul, who was a wrestler.
Right, right.
And Paul Ellering would go in. 5-on-5. Crazy.
And JJ's taking all
And JJ, the- I think, took the losses those first couple years. Yeah.
Of course. But that's who else is going to do it?
Same with Cornette, took the fall.
Right.
At the scaffold, yeah.
Oh, dude, I feel bad for his knees. I know people hate him.
Oh, he's fucked up for life for that. But, hey, I got the $20,000 bone, whatever the bone. we played a sold-out Greensboro High School Coliseum. Sold out, 555 seats. Gate of $982, which in today's time is $1,187. That's a huge gate. They don't do that no more.
You know what's funny? I was watching Dynamite this past Wednesday, and somebody in the front row, this guy who looked like the Unabomber, just sunglasses and a beard.
I saw that kid.
And he kept holding up just a variety of signs. And each one, you know, it was just some message. And one of them was, Jim Cornette is out of touch. Wow. I still listen to a lot of Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette, for the past 2 months, has liked more AEW than he's not liked.
Yes, he is. He's coming around.
I don't know what this guy is listening to.
Yeah, well, that guy, if I had a sign here, it'd say, that guy in the front row is out of touch.
No shit. I mean, and first of all, hey, look, I've said this about Vince McMahon. When people go, he's out of touch. It's like, yeah, no shit. He's 75.
He's an old man.
How many fucking old people do you know who are in touch with the youth of America? Leave old people alone.
But
they're
some
old.
Heyman always looks forward, even like a Conan.
Mm-hmm. Conan O'Brien?
Him too. But the wrestler Conan. Like,
oh, you mean Cody, Conan?
Yeah, Cody Rhodes brought up how he's trying to, and I don't think he has much management role anymore, but he wanted to stay in touch, and he asked Conan about it, and he said, brother, I still listen to whatever the hot music is so I can relate to the youth, so I can learn from the youth.
Who's this, Conan?
Conan, yeah, he wants to. There is a thing to that. There is people of you that maybe as poser, but if you're in this business,
I don't know if you
want to know
that,
what the your market is still.
Yeah, but you can never fully understand it. You know what I mean? It'd be like if all of a sudden I just started listening to EDM and going, yeah, this is pretty rad shit. Like, who am I fooling?
But you don't have to necessarily even like it. But you need to listen to it and get what's going on. I'm trying to do that now with my industry where I'm noticing what works with 22-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to just pander.
Right.
But I'm noticing what I'm doing already that's hitting harder, the hardest. And I'm going, okay, that's good to know.
Right.
And that's where the industry is going.
And
Terry Funk was someone who did that.
I think Terry Funk was just somebody who wrestled and was known and beloved as a wrestler and got booked and took a booking.
But he got what they're going at with that. He always said that. He saw who the audience liked. He started moonsaulting in the back end of his 40s.
Yeah, but at the same time, he was also doing the same shit in FMW. You know what I mean? He was just known as this wild.
But that's the same time frame. That's the audience changing. He understood it. He got putting people over. You always look. Progress is going to win.
I'm not disagreeing
no matter
with
what.
You. I'm saying I think it's it pretty hard for an old person to understand the youth of America.
In full, no. But you know, there was old timers who got the Beatles and understood that and understood rock and roll.
I think
and there's old people who got hip. Jimmy Iovine should not have liked hip hop. He signed fucking Dr. Dre and created Interscope. Or with Interscope, he created Death Row.
Right.
Allowed it to happen. There's people who do see that things are changing beyond what you necessarily love.
Sure. All right.
And grew up on.
We got it. You're hip, and I'm not.
I ain't shit. I don't even know who's number one right now. Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, yeah. That's what's really crazy.
I still want Britney to be a slave to her dad. No, I'm joking. I know. I was hooking up with a girl for a minute who broke up with a dude before me. Because he was like defending the dad.
What?
Are you that dumb? Do you not want to get laid that night that bad?
You know what's crazy is I have no idea what conservativeship means. I don't know anything about that story at all.
Just all you need to know is free Britney.
Whatever.
She's free, goddammit. How dare you want to keep Britney on the brain?
I don't know anything about her.
Where her dad was taking all her money and creative control.
How does that work? How does that legally come about?
Because she started as a minor.
All right, but how does that continue? And I mean, this is not what this podcast is for. Fuck it. Let's speaking
Look
of
the turnbuckle, Britney. Can we start that?
All right, let's talk about the women's division of AEW.
What did you say? Everything you wanted to about the tag team division?
I mean, this is free flowing, man. What is there to say? I fucking love FTR, and I will say it here and now. I think they're the shit, and they should be the tag team champions again.
And they're going to have a great program, I think, in the next few months. I think they're going to bring in the Briscoes, and that's going to be hot.
I think,
and eventually Briscoes versus Lucha is going to be outstanding.
I think when it years from now, when people look back,
yeah,
they're going to put, you know, if you're going to talk about greatest tag teams of all time, I think Dudley's, Road Warriors, I think the Hardys.
Sure.
I think Bucks and FTR go in there and Briscoes.
You and I have always discussed this. The Briscoes stayed on a lesser stage. Yep. And I know it's interesting.
I'm not taking that into an account.
But it's interesting, and we don't really have time to get into this, but I know you've always said, I listened to Jay Lethal on Jericho, and I know you felt that a lot of people stayed at ROH for a reason, and that was more a fault on them. But there's guys like him who just stayed loyal, and I think the Briscoes were part of that, and they were comfortable.
Yeah.
And the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. You stay where you are. I think the Briscoes probably could have went anywhere. There is some issues with statements that one of them have said that might have gotten them in trouble in WWE.
I mean, these guys are, first of all, I had someone, we grew up in Vegas, obviously, we're still here, and you remember from my childhood, a friend of mine named Justin.
I love him.
He's the most southern person you and I probably will ever meet.
I don't know if he's ever left he's never gone past the Colorado River.
Yes.
And as I go, where down south are you from? Southern Nevada, dog.
And it blows me away that these two guys from Delaware are the most southern guys ever.
They're hillbillies, and Delaware, if you're not familiar, is the whole state is a suburb of Philadelphia.
Right.
The state is a suburb of a city in Pennsylvania. Truth. Yes. And I've said that to many people from Delaware and have never had to fight over it. Right. It is the truth. And they are hillbillies.
Right. It's pretty
and
wild.
And I've drank with one of them. I forget who. The one who's missing the most teeth.
That's, yeah. Not Jay.
And laughed at the silliest stuff ever and was a fun hang.
Yeah.
Oh, brother, yeah. That was great.
Well, look, I think, well, because not for some reason, they have a family business, that chicken farm. That's
so crazy.
That's a shoot. And they're running it and being wrestlers at the same time. So it makes sense that they probably don't want to leave because they have a comfortable thing going where
with
they
less
can.
Dates.
They can do the fucking chicken farm shit and wrestle. So yeah, I understand that, but they're capable of so much more.
They're,
you know,
an outstanding tag team.
Yeah,
they are wonderful to watch. Oh, I was at the first All In. That was the first actual match, not the free stuff on YouTube before. That was the opening match, if I'm not mistaken, or what? Maybe it was on the free stuff, but they popped that whole fucking arena, bro.
Yeah,
I want to say they took on SCU.
Yeah, maybe.
And it was absolute, brother, I can't even tell you.
But yeah, but all those eight.
They went nuts, that stadium for them.
But all those Ring of Honor guys who I mentioned, Dalton Castle, Jay Lethal, the Briscoes, they were all capable of much more, but for whatever reason, never expanded past that. And it, I think that the loyalty bloom was off the rose only a few years ago. When AEW comes Change about, it. What the fuck are we doing? There's a whole nother company that where you can get a bump.
Well, Ring of Honor got to being the number two over Impact in right. America. And look,
which is crazy because Ring of Honor's TV is impossible to find.
It's they're not in New York. They still they ran Hammerstein in New York City once or twice a year and were not on in New York.
Right.
I couldn't find them in New York. And it's really weird. And they were but here's the thing. I have a feeling these people you mentioned got either six figures or just below.
Mm-hmm.
You work 3 weekends a month.
Yeah.
That's it. Lethal brought that up. He had all this free time.
Right.
And that's great. And you can also, I believe a lot of those could take independent dates and that. And why wouldn't you take that?
Oh, here's a question. And we'll wrap this.
Good, because my bladder's telling me I'm a, my bladder is saying, go home, brother.
Hey, well, fucking Hook debuts and everyone's over the moon about him. And even I, that night, texted you and Cody and said, Hook's my new favorite wrestler.
And I watched Rampage that night. I usually wait.
Right. But with today's modern schedule, where they only fucking wrestle once a week, if that, sometimes, oftentimes, it's once every other week. Do you think that this new generation, I can see you stirring, oh, pee is coming out of your eyelids.
Not good, right. It is not good.
All
right,
I'll quickly ask the question. You give me
the
answer.
Oh, I think so. Yes, I think he's great. He's going to be wonderful, and I think they're going to get their reps over. I'll see you next week, boogies.
Turnbuckle Boogie is a Devo Looter production and is produced by Timothy Styles and Cody Hancock, with web production and music provided by Timothy Styles. For more information, go to turnbuckleboogie.com. And for booking information on Cutthroat Cody Hancock, go to cutthroatcody.com. See you next Monday.